Good morning, Your Honors. Brian Krikorian on behalf of appellant, and I'd reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. I think while this seems to be a pretty straightforward issue, and I've certainly felt that way to the trial court judge, I think as I argued in my opening brief, it does create an issue, I think, of first impression. And it has broader issues, which I would like to argue, beyond just a party being able to state a claim. First of all, there is this incongruity between the state law, which is that all insurance companies have the unfettered right to settle and handle cases without the interference of the insured, even to the extent that the insured objects to it. The insurance company can take any decision it wants, versus Rule 13, which essentially says all claims are compulsory. And I think that's where it narrows down.
Let's look at this from the standpoint of the other party. Stalford knows he's in a collision with Chukri. Chukri knows he's in a collision with Stalford. Stalford files a lawsuit, does nothing wrong or unusual. The case gets settled. It's dismissed without prejudice.
Isn't
that what happened?
Yes, yeah. Exactly what happened.
So why should Stalford bear the risk of loss of anything that happened on the other side of the case?
Because the law itself basically, and that's what I was going to get to as the broader point, the law itself basically takes the right of Mr. Chukri to be represented by counsel of his choosing, who will look out for him, away from him.
And so Stalford should bear the risk of loss for that reason?
Yes, because the law basically is put in place.
Well, let me ask you, are you saying that the attorneys financed by the insurer had an obligation to file the counterclaim?
I think at a minimum, they had an obligation not to dismiss the lawsuit with prejudice.
Okay. So did they have a duty not to do that?
In my opinion, they did.
Okay.
But I'm
so
I'm,
why does why does
a lawyer,
it affect,
judge.
Well, why does it affect Mr. Stalford?
Because
that whether or not Mr. Chukri's lawyers honored their duty to him.
Because I believe the protection that Mr. Stalford is given is that under the law, you are mandatorily required to have insurance. And under the law, he has to be protected by that insurance.
Are you talking about Mr. Chukri now?
Mr. Stalford. Because if a party has insurance, doesn't care, Mr. Chukri could have fallen off the face of the earth. But the law says as long as he had insurance, that insurance company has to pay that claim if it's valid. So Mr. Stalford is protected.
If he has insurance.
Well, he's protected from liability. But
if he has insurance.
But
and
what
I think
about is his protection is also, he was already involved in the only lawsuit that should exist under the rules,
right,
stemming from these facts.
Right.
And it's over with now.
I agree. And I'm saying, Your
so
Honor,
why should his repose be interfered with because of anything that happened on the other side of the case?
Because I believe the law itself is creating a bubble for him. I mean, I'm not blaming Mr. Stalford, and I...
Well, you're blaming the attorney, then.
I'm blaming the legislature.
Why not sue the attorney for malpractice?
That's certainly an option, Your Honor, and I guess that's not why. I mean, and as I've told clients who I represent in malpractice cases, judges say that all the time. Sorry, go sue your attorney. And certainly that could be an option for him, but ultimately he'll end up suing his insurance company, and because they employ the attorney. And I think the problem is really I understand Judge Dwyer's point, and I'm not up here saying that this isn't a difficult problem, but it seems to me ultimately inequitable because Mr. Chukri had no control over it.
But he was told that if he had claims, he needed to get his own lawyer,
correct,
right?
Correct.
Okay.
So why isn't that control?
Because he doesn't have control over this lawyer. And this lawyer basically went ahead and settled the case and dismissed it without his input. And so
he had the right to go get an attorney.
Certainly
and
did,
then,
Your Honor.
And
I'm not disputing that. But I'm disputing having the rug pulled out from under him. That's what I'm disputing. I'm thinking and...
Are you saying that the insurance company should not have been able to settle the claim without him...
I think that the protection he should have had is that the law, in essence, creates a vacuum that the insurance company and whatever lawyer they hire, whether it's an outside lawyer or inside lawyer, has the right to do whatever they want without his consent. So in other words, to get to Justice Dwyer's question, if he hired me independently and I did whatever I wanted to, that's malpractice, in my opinion, because the Grossman versus Will in the state of law of Washington is there are certain rights you cannot surrender for a client without their express informed consent. The law and the statute, the RCW, says we're going to carve that out in insurance cases and allow the attorneys and the insurance companies to do whatever they want, no matter what the client says, because our goal, public policy, is to make sure everyone is covered by who was injured in an accident has money available. What I'm saying, Your Honor, is, and it may just be one of those loopholes and quirks that unfortunately parties have to deal with, but in this situation, he has no control over his lawyer. He can't tell that lawyer, no, don't dismiss the case, don't settle the case. I haven't got a lawyer yet. I'm not ready to sue. That lawyer makes the decision for him without his informed consent.
Well, he was told something.
He was told, and I'll just take an extra minute, he was told you need to get a new attorney. But then the attorney goes ahead and dismisses the case with prejudice before he gets an attorney in place.
Was he trying to get one, and did he say I'm going to get an attorney?
I think there was an attorney that he was consulting with, but that I don't know if necessarily on a 12B6 if it's relevant, but I think he had an attorney that he had started to consult with. Again, Your Honor, the fact pattern of this case is that this case settled within 2 months of filing. So, again, if it had dragged on for 6, 7, 8 months, I think the argument would be a lot harder for me to make. But, they immediately filed it, they immediately settled it, they immediately dismissed it with prejudice, resulting in him, even if he was consulting with a lawyer, being put in a position of having no rights, no say. Because he has no say. I don't think that's a dispute. Yes, he does have the right to go hire another lawyer. Let's see it hired that lawyer. Lawyer's preparing the case, investigating it, blah, 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 boom, bing. Your case is dismissed. You can't file anything again.
Well,
how
I
is
suppose that,
that
if
his
he
fault?
Did have an attorney, if he had gone out and gotten an attorney, he would have, that attorney would have been in touch with the insurance.
I would assume that, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. Dan Johnson on behalf of the respondent. Mr. Chukri may not have had control of his attorney, but he did have control of the case. Mr. Chukri was told that there was limited time to bring counterclaims, and if he did want to do so, he needed to get another attorney or bring that to the attorney's attention immediately.
Is that what the case turns on? I mean, this was a 12B6 motion, I take
it. The judge said it was a 12B6 motion. There, it was brought as a dispositive motion with the 30 days notice. They took matters outside the pleadings in terms of bringing the judge's decision, but she said it was a 12B6 motion.
So what is the principle of law that the decision stands for?
The principle of law the decision stands for is that CR 13A has been established in this state for a long time, and that you can't make an exception that swallows the rule itself. If Mr. Chukri had been accused of taking a pack of pens from his employer and his union says, oh, don't worry, we've got you covered, but we can't bring a wrongful termination suit for you, then every time that a person brings a suit that is not paid for them by themselves, then the exception swallows the rule. There is no 13A.
Well, isn't the principle of law that Stalford behaved consistent with the rules in the lawsuit that he started? There was a dismissal without any claim being brought against him, and he's entitled to repose from that. And if something untoward or nefarious happened on the other side of the case, that may give remedies to the other party, but that doesn't affect Mr. Stalford's rights.
Correct, Judge Schwer. But also, Mr. Chukri did have remedies. The underlying trial court said, there's a remedy under CR 60. Go back to the underlying matter. Open that. Bring your compulsory counterclaim. But you can't do it here. You can't prejudice Mr. Stalford because this case has already been dismissed.
Well, so the principle of law, again, back to the rule. The rule says a pleading shall state as a counterclaim any claim which at the time of serving the pleading the pleader has against any opposing party if it arises out of the transaction. So how did that go here? I mean, in other words, Mr. Stalford sued, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Sued Mr. Chuckery.
Mr. Stafford.
Did Mr. Chuckery answer?
Mr. Chuckery was appointed counsel, as pointed out by the appellant, by his assurance company. Whether that was staff counsel, panel counsel, it doesn't matter. He was appointed counsel to represent him. That attorney said, I will represent you under the defending claim because that's what you've paid insurance for. That's what you have a contract with your insurance company for. But I cannot represent you under the terms of that insurance contract for bringing counterclaims, for bringing cross claims. I cannot represent you for other claims arising out of this incident. You must seek other counsel to do that. And if you do, we will work with them.
So that was in a letter?
It was.
And because of the need to act expeditiously, did the letter include some sort of language that communicated that?
It did, Your Honor, and it's in the briefing, but the letter says, if you intend to pursue a claim or make a counterclaim or cross-claim, please contact your attorney immediately, since strict time limitations may apply to such actions for damages.
And even though the judge characterized the decision as a 12B6, because the judge considered information outside the record, was it really a summary judgment decision?
That's not before the court, but yes, Your Honor, it really was a CR 56 motion.
But how could this work under the literal language of the rule? I mean, it says a pleading shall state as a counterclaim any claim which at the time of serving the pleading the pleader has. So your answer is, well, we couldn't do that for him because he didn't pay for it. But then how does it get done? Because you're defending him, you're filing the answer, and that's the time at which, you know, the pleader, that's him, is supposed to state his counterclaim, and yet he can't because you're the one who's filing the answer.
There are limited.
What if he said to you, look, I do have a counterclaim, please state it for me? Well, we can't because you didn't pay for it.
I've been in the situation, Your Honor, and you say, yes, we can. First, we can file it to toll the statute for you with the 20 days, or we won't file it, but we will ask the court, we will put in the complaint that a counterclaim is going to be filed once you have an attorney on board.
Well, you don't have to have an attorney to file a counterclaim.
You do not, but most of the people that would be in that position would want one. They can.
Well, most people might want one, but I mean, we're talking about 12B6 here, a principle of law.
Right.
So there's nothing in here that says that the pleader has to get a lawyer.
There is nothing that says the pleader has to get a lawyer.
So why can't you file the counterclaim if he says, look, I want to file one?
You can. An attorney can file a counterclaim and say the pro se plaintiff is, defendant, counterclaim plaintiff, is representing himself or herself on the counterclaim. But under the terms of an insurance contract, the attorney that is appointed by an insurance company cannot take affirmative actions to represent that person.
So did your letter to him say that you could do that?
This is Mr. Stoutford's lawyer.
I understand.
The letter, to my knowledge, no. I don't believe that the letter from Progressive Insurance Company's assigned counsel said that in that many words, nor do I believe any insurance company's assigned counsel in the state of Washington says that to that extent.
Okay. Well, I mean, it just seems like here's a person who you know, could have been asked, look, do you want to file a counterclaim? And maybe he would have said yes.
But isn't that the issue between Mr. Chuckery and his attorney from his insurance company?
It is, Your Honor, but, I mean, it raises certainly bigger concerns. But for the purposes of this oral argument, yes, that is not the fault or the ability for Mr. Stafford to control. However, what more can an attorney do other than put you on notice of the law? Mr. Chuckery's attorney can say there's a 3-year statute of limitations. You can have empathy for him for blowing the 3-year statute of limitations, but there's still a 3-year statute of limitations. The same principle applies. Once you're made aware of the law, you have to follow it at some point. And unless the court has further questions for me, I have no more argument.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Three minutes remaining.
Okay.
I'd like to address the last point counsel raised is the where of the law and the three-year statute of limitations. In this case, this isn't the case where my client was told, you have this right, we won't do it, you need to do it. A year, 2 years, 3 years went by, and he did nothing. And now he's blaming his attorney or he's blaming the system. This is a case where the case was filed, as Your Honor points out, and as I've argued, 2 months later, it was dismissed with prejudice. So he had no control, and I think that's where I get to.
So what is the principle of law that you're trying to have this court articulate?
I think
a rule
I'm dancing on
R13, or
I'm dancing on the knife's edge of between legal malpractice claim and seeing if there is a rule that there is an exception made to the rule that doesn't subsume the rule, but essentially says is the two cases I could find in the country, and we were out in Tennessee and back east, but essentially where the law, I think if I were going to argue an exception, it should be in situations where there is insurance mandated by the RCW sections and the client has no more control over the attorneys other than to go along on the ride, that certainly that in those situations he or she should have the right to assert those claims within the statute of limitations at a different date.
It's a little bit hard to see how to get into this case. I mean, it's like trying to get an oyster shell open. You know, you've got to have some kind of leverage. I mean, you don't have rule.
I understand, Your Honors.
You're saying this is just unfair and the statute shouldn't be written.
As counsel and I were talking about before we took argument, if Your Honors were really going to say this is just the way the rule goes, I suspect we wouldn't have had oral argument. So obviously it's a question Your Honors are considering. And I agree with you. And I think even the courts in the other cases said, on its face, this is a clear-cut issue. It's one of them said it's a bald decision. It should be dismissed. But I think, as in every case, sometimes there are exceptions.
You've cast it as an argument of first impression. I think that's...
Well, no court in this state has ever strictly addressed whether or not an insurance counsel dismisses a case without the client's approval, where the client has no say. And I think that's where I'm trying to focus the court is. In all the examples Your Honors have given us, if a client hires me and I mess up, that's hopefully why I malpractice coverage. But where the situation of the law mandates that the insured has no say whatsoever on what his attorney is.
But he did have a say on filing the counterclaim.
But I was going to get himself to Judge Becker's point.
He could have done it himself, or he could have hired a lawyer.
Or, as Judge Becker pointed out, the attorney could have said, I'm going to file it for you pro se. I'll prepare one, file it pro se. You better go get an attorney, but I'm going to do that. There are plenty of things the attorney could have done, and here I am arguing malpractice.
Yes,
but could I make one quick point, and I won't go more than 20 seconds. When I was in front of When I was in front of Judge Helsin and counsel wasn't there, and an associate came arguing, I specifically asked her, this motion is not delineated as a summary judgment, and it's not delineated at 12A6. I don't even know what standard we're applying here. And she said, I'm viewing it as a 12B6. Okay. So I would just submit, shouldn't pull the rules on me and change it, because that's the way Judge Helsin looked at it.
All right.
So... anyway, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right, our last case this morning is...